you want to help people move forward, to get behind, to re-engage, to connect, they have to have a purpose that they are proud of and that they can believe that they can join and make a difference in. And that single statement, thoughtfully crafted, inspired 30,000 people in ways that you couldn't imagine.
Welcome, dear Lightwolf listener, and a warm welcome to today's Lightwolf podcast episode. My name is Stefan. I'm your podcast host and the leadership catalyst. And it's my huge pleasure to today welcome a member, a cooperation partner of my SHL team. We've made it a habit recently to have conversations between partners like Chris and myself, in order to give you insight into the way we work as a team. So first off, a very warm welcome to you, Chris Sergio.
Thank you, Stefan. Great to be with you today and great to be part of the team.
For you guys, for you, the listener listening to today's podcast, let me introduce Chris to you. Chris is one of our cooperation partners. He is a trainer, a coach, and consultant in our business. We at SHL help companies multiply their enterprise value through clear strategy, high-performance teams, and consistent leadership culture. And Chris has exceptional strengths and exceptional experience in exactly these three areas: strategy, teams, leadership culture. He's an outstanding leader, a former CEO, a former CMO of a big organization. Great professional background, including Ernst & Young, where Chris started his career as a business management consultant, Procter & Gamble, where he was a marketing director, a local hire in Germany, although US national, and that's where Chris and I met a long time ago, Syngenta, global head of professional products, a transformation role, Brown-Forman, executive committee, EVP, global chief marketing officer, the makers of Jack Daniels, a whiskey brand that is leading in the world and that you may be aware of. Then North American Breweries, one of the biggest breweries in the US, chief executive officer, successful business turnaround, leading about 2,500 people, and now CEO of Net Positive Holdings, LLC, his own family office, and, as I told you, working in my team. Prior to his professional career, Chris graduated from Duke University, where he played men's soccer on the first school's team ever, first ever Division I national championship team in any sport. And it was football, as I learned.
And soccer, yeah, exactly.
Soccer, as I learned, and not basketball, as many people think. And earned his MBA from Southern Methodist University in marketing and entrepreneurship. Maybe a short anecdote on the collaboration that builds our relationship, but ours goes way back a long, long time. A client in New York experienced Chris and me as co-trainers. Feedback and results were outstanding. In fact, the client was so impressed that after three performances, they are now planning to expand and scale the Lightwolf program across 50 plus leaders around the world. And I'm really looking forward to this. And it was my pleasure when we co-trained to listen to Chris's experience that just make people stop, think, and reflect. And I hope this happens now, guys, with you throughout this conversation. So let's launch the topic. Today, we are talking about a topic that matters to many of you and should be a KPI of every CEO. Employee engagement. Why is it important? So Chris, let's start with this. Why is employee engagement important to you?
Well, first, thank you for letting me join the team and join the podcast, Stefan. I think love the work that you all are doing and that we are doing as a group. I know it makes significant impact and is important for folks. And if I can go from Pampers diapers to Jack Daniels whiskey and bourbon, Tennessee whiskey, I think we can make a lot of things happen. So this is one of my most favorite topics. There's really nothing more important than employee engagement. And why is that? It's all about driving performance, leadership, and culture. And employee engagement, when done well, truly authentically, and over a sustained period of time, we all know drives high performance. High performance for the individual helps them to be all that they can be, helps the organization, the team, the company, and creates value. So there's no question that employee engagement is one of the most important things as leaders that we can think about and nurture.
Thank you, Chris. When you and I ran this leadership program together over in Amsterdam, you shared a moment that stuck with me and everybody in the room. You were a new CEO in an organization with 2,500 people and families, depending on them. Can you describe how you see with your own eyes whether an employee is engaged or not?
Well, yes. I mean, as leaders, I think we've all been in that meeting when, whether it's a small group or a large group, especially a large group, when you're speaking and the room is quiet, you're looking around the room trying to see what the body language is, and you're hoping that people are either giving you eye contact or are looking engaged, looking interested. And the real telltale sign is when somebody puts their heads down and they check out. And you can feel it as a leader. And it's for me, the most important part is the only way you can win is if everybody in the team is playing their role and contributing. And if members of your team are stepping out, not engaging, stopping to speak, stopping to share their opinions, there's no way that you and your team can be successful or as successful as you want. And so seeing when people check out and disengage is one of the most critical moments of a leader. And then you got to decide, what do you do next? Because you can tell. And then you're sitting there speaking, knowing you're not getting the optimal result. And that is just not acceptable. It's really hard to manage and navigate.
So what did you do when you saw a couple of people heads down in that room when you started?
You know, it depends on the situation. You have to be authentic. You have to go to a place, even vulnerable. You have to judge the moment and the time. And, you know, the situation we're talking about, there are a couple different moments. You can't solve it all in the meeting. It's hard to put people on the spot to say, hey, so-and-so, is everything okay? You know, you don't have the luxury of being able to do that all the time in meetings, depending on the situation. But I think the most important piece is you have to be authentic. As a leader, you have to be willing to share your personal stories and hopefully find a way to engage somebody. You can't force them. And so you do the best you can. And in this case, you know, I had been starting my role. I was less than 3 months in that position as a new CEO of a private equity company that was selling to a strategic industry leader. And I had, you know, over 30 folks who had seen almost a half a dozen CEOs over 10 years.
Oh, that's a lot.
And, you know, they wonder, is this guy in front of them going to be there next, or is he going to be moving on as well? And so when you know that they've got those kind of challenges that are real, you have to be passionate about what you're doing, and you have to be authentic, and you need to get help. You can't do it all on your own. And so if you can't be authentic and find a way to help them believe in your vision or believe in your mission or give you a chance, then you're really stuck. And so you've got to be authentic and real in the moment and then adjust.
Yeah. If you think about the people who very understandably with half a dozen CEOs in 10 years were frustrated, did you manage to get them back to feeling motivated? And if yes, how?
Yeah, I mean, that takes years. I mean, you know, in any given meeting or transformation or situation, there's always three groups of people. You know, there's the folks that are ready to go. They're excited. They want to move forward. They want to transform. They're with you and off you go. And then there's the group that's kind of cautious that says, well, let's see what happens. We'll figure out if this guy's going to be around for a while. And if he is, maybe we'll support him or not. But we're going to wait and see. And then there's the other group that just says, they'll be gone in 2 years. No way am I going to get stuck in. and they're going to just not dig in, not engage. And you got to realize that that is the situation. And to engage people, you just can't expect to transform within a meeting or a month. You have to consistently over time develop and co-create that strategy, that vision. You have to get leaders to buy in, and then you have to share it. And so we created an initiative that was a really thoughtful, thought through initiative where we involved a significant number of leaders across the company to create a new growth vision. We took our time to share that across different levels of the company. And then we really built in some factors around how to build one culture instead of staying and sticking with many cultures. And then we launched that patiently and with intentionality across all employees, across all sites over a year. And that did work. That did shift the engagement. But you know, you can't expect to go from start to finish in a year. It's a consistent, continuous process. So you have to keep doing it. So, but we worked on it intentionally.
Yeah. And I love it. I can see how it can work. So intentional and thoughtful and considered transformation with purpose at its heart, but still not every transformation works, right? Because either companies start the change, but do not complete it and regard it as finished way too early, or the other root cause, companies just transform the business, but not the culture and not the leadership. So you just said it took us a year and it worked. If you look back at this successful transformation, and you said already patience is one of the ingredients, why did it work?
Yeah, and I would say a year, it means you're just getting started. I mean, I've been really lucky, whether it's been working in countries, cultures, continents, different industries, growth challenges. You know, whenever you step up as in a leader in an organization, the leadership challenge can be extremely different. Are you in a turnaround situation? Are you in a cost reduction situation? And you need to understand what is the business challenge and what is the culture challenge. And the examples, I've been very fortunate to be involved in several of these different across the page. And I would say that, you know, being aligned on your company purpose and your direction, your North Star, differentiates those that ultimately get it right and sustain success over time versus those that might change and have a hard time engaging the employees to move forward with them. And I was very lucky at a company called Syngenta to be a part of a leadership team, 30,000 people, where we spent over 5 years with the exact same leadership team, very intentionally, very sequentially going through to realign and reintroduce our company's purpose, our values, updating our North Star as a company. What are our business unit strategies? How does that tie to innovation? And then constantly bringing that and communicating that in well-measured ways to the entire 30,000 people across 150 countries. And we had a CEO and a set of leaders that stuck to the course. We had continuity, and they were able to believe in that journey. And that almost tripled the market cap value of the company. So, wow. You know, we very systematically went at how to transform to a growth company. And I'm, you know, very proud I can share the purpose of that company and I think why it was so successful. So Syngenta is an agricultural world leader. This is in 2000. And it was positioned itself as an IPO from Zeneca and Novartis's chemical divisions. And when they put those together and created a new company called Syngenta, they had a purpose, which was better food for a better life, which makes sense. You know, it's a good description, but it wasn't inspiring. And after they completed all the cost synergies of the company, the CEO was very clear that we needed to build a growth company. And we needed to do that with similar capabilities and similar people. And the only way to do that was to transform our purpose and really to engage all assets and people and capabilities of the company around a different growth direction. And a long story short, the new purpose came to be was bringing plant potential to life. So the company, just imagine that. So you got one company that's called Better Food for Better Life, and it does certain things. And then you've got another purpose for the same organization, a similar group of capabilities and footprint, and it's all about bringing plant potential to life. So it went to being a company that was looking at plants around the world and using technology to bring the potential of plants to life in its double meaning, both people and into fruition. And that single statement, thoughtfully crafted, inspired 30,000 people in ways that you couldn't imagine. And it allowed businesses and people to, and organizations and countries to play roles in innovation that had never been strategic or thought of before. So, you know, as we kind of weave around this, if you're really trying to sustain transformation or growth, I think one of the first primary drivers of that is having a clear purpose and then figuring out how do you operationalize that and bring it to life in a way that it can really stick and inspire people and make people proud that they're working for that company.
Yeah,
it works.
And staying with this example for a moment, I can see how the second purpose is bigger and more specific than the first one. It doesn't necessarily jump at me at first glance, but at second glance, I can see the potential. And as you described, it seems to have really shaped the company and led it to an entirely new level. What were secrets? What were some key lessons you learned, not only in crafting the statement, but making it come to life?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to go back to a little bit of the context to that. So, you know, there's a company that has an IPO of many legacy companies in the agricultural industry throughout the world. So, you know, there were people that were joining this new IPO that were coming from 6, 8, 10 different companies historically throughout their career, each of them with a different purpose, each of them with a different way of running the organization and culture. And yet, this new IPO created one new company. And one of the magic pieces of that equation is if you can create a purpose that is on strategy, that is inspiring and opens up growth for business and people and the world, so to speak, people are proud to move to that path. They're proud to say, I work for that company. They leave the legacy. I used to work for Roman Haas. I used to work for Novartis. They move and find themselves being part of something new that's growing. And so the magic of an inspiring purpose is that it unites people to move forward, And then they can bring their maximum potential to their team, to their business, to their organization, to the company. And so, you know, the first secret is realizing that when you're trying to grow and move forward in different ways, having an inspiring purpose can help people find a new identity to be proud of where they're working. And we know that one of the key engagement factors that people measure, companies measure, is, you know, are you proud to work for that company? And the higher that score is in these, you know, employee engagement scores, the higher correlation to sustained growth or ability to grow there is. And so, you know, one of the overlooked secrets or thing is if you want to move, help people move forward, to get behind, to re-engage, to connect, they have to have a purpose that they are proud of and that they can believe that they can join and make a difference in, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And did you have town hall meetings, company parties, team meetings? How did you create the environment? How did you create the space for people to buy in to that new purpose?
We took our time. You know, like I said, this was a 5-year process at Syngenta that was very thoughtfully crafted and curated. So the first starting point was to go with purpose and values. So we relaunched the values of the company to match the purpose so that they were in service and connected. And what was interesting was that we created a Syngenta Values Awards program. So to launch the new values, you know, we did what any corporate communications team would do. They did posters, they did beautiful designs, they had them go up across companies all across the world. But we created a values program where people could then submit stories. And we all know that if you can tell stories, that stories have the ability to really stick and make a difference when they're, especially yes. when you know how to tell a great story.
Exactly.
So we had a program where like cadence, like clockwork, there was in April, May, June, the Syngenta's values program was rolled out. So everybody knew what the values were. And then they could submit stories that their businesses or their people were actually doing in the business in their local markets that demonstrated the values of the company. And they submitted stories, and we got thousands of submissions. Wow. From across the entire company. And then we would review which were the leading stories, the winning stories that brought the values to life in a way that we felt really demonstrated that throughout the company. And then through a process of evaluation and selection, we then brought in the top three winners from each four categories. So we had a purpose winner for each value. And then we had a winner for each value. And then we had a winner for the purpose. So we had five categories, values and purpose. Those people were flown in from wherever they were working in whatever situation. And then they were brought to the annual leadership conference at the end of the year. And they did a trade show where they then were celebrated and demonstrated in front of hundreds of people how they brought their values to life through their business and what the impact of that was on people, planet, and our employees. And then we selected winners, and then they were awarded and brought up on stage and celebrated and triumphed. And it was, when you do that year after year after year, people begin to look forward to it. It becomes part of their excitement, and it becomes part of your corporate calendar. I mean, I hate to use those words, but it's, you have to have a cadence so that you systematically bring this so people look forward to it. And these values, because of the stories and because of the way that we celebrated people, it was a big deal. People really looked forward to becoming a leader in their community, in their country, or if you will, their business. And then being selected to come meet the CEO, meet the leadership team, be celebrated. It was a big deal. And after 5 years, it was just like clockwork. People, you know, looked forward to it. It was exciting. We all loved the stories. I mean, I could give you, you know, one that sticks out that's just fun. That I remember in India, they had one which was called The Farmer's Wife. And there was a story about how do you double the productivity of rice in Asia, because food, feed, fuel competition for rice was increasing. Animals needed more feed. People were growing. Populations were moving. And if you didn't have enough rice in the ecosystem, you couldn't feed the animals who were then being used for food. You couldn't feed the people because they were growing and the population was growing. So there was this project, and they basically broke down the life cycle of the crop of rice into a 90-day crop cycle. And they figured out, you know, before planting, during planting, and then harvesting. But one of the big things and factors was that they couldn't get enough workers to come and do the planting because it's so manually intensive. And they realized that through the program that they created, that one of the other key factors, in addition to the technology that we had, was that you had to feed these workers who were coming. And if they didn't have adequate food, they wouldn't stay. They would go to the next project or next work. And so the farmer's wife in this case was a critical player in this process, because not only were they securing the technology and the chemicals in this case to do the work, but the farmer's wife was out there with them producing all the rice for the workers to eat. And a long story short, the leaders of the employees that were parts of those projects and their families came to the annual leadership conference event, and they celebrated their families for bringing Plant Potential to life so that the entire family was involved and shifted. And they didn't double it, but they significantly increased the productivity. But the fact that they chose the title of their story to be The Farmer's Wife was pretty amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for sharing this story. So there was a couple of really worthwhile techniques, if you use the term that you used: storytelling, rewarding and celebrating, and continuity. Right? Doing this on a permanent 5-year
basis. Yeah, and the beauty was that these values were connected to the purpose. You know, it was all, yeah. And it wasn't just soft. It was that you operationalized by tying them to the business and making it come to life through the work. You could get this clarity and connection about, if we think about our purpose, we think about how to bring it to life through the values of our organization, health, innovation, you actually can grow the business and get more people involved. And there's a real tangible connection. It has to be visible, tangible, and it has to get results. And if you can nurture that connectivity, it sticks. And we all know we've been places where companies bring out big new slogans, big new ideas, and if they don't stick, it has a very short life. And yeah, the leaders at Syngenta were very smart to bring this out very patiently, consistently, and to nurture it and build and grow it so that it stuck and became part of the culture, and it worked.
Awesome. Fantastic example. Related to what you've just said, and on a topic you already touched upon, it's around engagement. And I remember also the moment when you and I co-delivered the leadership program, when you talked about three things that our employees need to feel in order to perform at their best and having fun at it. Would you mind sharing these three?
Yeah. First off, I want to give a very sincere recognition to a woman at Procter & Gamble, a senior leader. Her name is Carol Tuthill. She was a senior vice president of human resources, and she nurtured these leadership courses that we were all very lucky to be a part of over time. And it was co-training with her that this insight came out. And again, what I learned there that I'll share in a second is true for any culture. I mean, you and I have worked, lots of your listeners, have worked in hundreds of countries with businesses across multiple categories. Yeah. But I can give you with great clarity that these three factors are effective no matter what the culture, no matter what the industry is, no matter what the business challenge is. If you can help employees to feel valued, included, and empowered, those three things, that leads to greater trust with their managers and leaders, and nurtured over time and really done authentically, that leads to higher employee engagement and better results. No question.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I share your belief. Question: how do you do that? How do you make people feel valued, included, and empowered?
You got to be committed. You have to believe. There's so many people that just, or leaders that want to move quickly from one place to the next and just move on through the course of a challenge or a project. You and the team have more experience than I ever will have. I think the reality is that if you don't have a leader that sees the benefit of those things and is committed to bringing that to life in their team, in their organization, it won't happen consistently. And you can't do those three things for a month. To be authentic, you have to do this over time. And it's a way of life. It's a commitment. It's a belief in that, human leaders who can do this will get a higher quality environment in the organization. They'll get better results. They'll get better talent developed. You really have to believe and invest in it, and you have to be authentic. How do you help people be their best selves consistently over time when things get tough? it's a real commitment, and you can't do it all yourself. Your team needs to help itself to build that. You know, it's not just one person and suddenly it happens. It's a way of working. It's a mindset that is proven time over time.
Yeah. You know, this sounds absolutely plausible and immediately relatable to everyone listening right now. And still, one of the tougher challenges that we as a business team with you and the other cooperation partners face occasionally, that there are leaders in organizations, sometimes middle managers, sometimes senior leaders, sometimes all the way up to the CEO or even the chairman of the board, who just behave in ways that don't really fit with making people valued, included, or empowered. Sometimes going so far as to really destructive behavior or even toxic behavior, right? I know this is a difficult subject, Chris, but you have a lot of experience. Have you ever experienced a toxic leader? And have you found ways to make them stop being toxic without letting them go?
I think, you know, you raise a couple of questions. You know, there's leading up, there's leading across your peers, and then there's leading down with your subordinates. And I think you're asking a couple of questions, which is really related to managing upwards, leading upwards, or, you know, how do leaders who are at the top survive or thrive, or what do they do in that position? And I think the short answer is, I think we've all seen who those folks are. You know, we've all had examples. And I think my experience over time is that we all have strengths and development areas that we work on. And usually, as you gain more experience in your career, your development areas don't dramatically shift or change. And your ability to be more successful is accentuated by developing your strengths. And the more you can develop your strengths at a certain moment in time, the more you stand out, because they truly are your strengths. Unfortunately, there are situations where the toxic leaders that you're talking about, those are their strengths. And I think my experience has been, maybe I won't answer your question, what did I do differently? I think you have to choose as a leader to be authentic, but it's very difficult to manage up when somebody is like that. And I think what I can say is very confidently is that in multiple companies, in multiple countries, in multiple categories, those leaders ultimately don't last.
I agree. And, thank God they don't.
Yeah. I mean, they go after short-term results. They push through, they force things. You know, that's a successful recipe for a very short period of time with maybe a specific challenge, but it's not how you build high performance companies that sustain growth over time consistently year after year. We know that.
Absolutely agree. Now, shifting topics again, if you look at your entire life, including your professional career, has there been any special moment that shaped your view on leadership or changed it quite substantially?
I think there was a moment where I was, without going into names, there was a leader of a company, a large company, and he was getting an award. And this leader did amazing things for the company, the business, and the community in which it operated. And he was being honored with another person for a different business award, a very prestigious award. And we all showed up to be supportive of that individual getting the award. And the person that went first stood up and made their speech. And I didn't think about it until after this second gentleman spoke that I'm going to refer to. But the first person used the word I probably 2/3 of the time or more. The second person that I'm referring to got up, never used the word I, talked about we, focused on the greater good. And the thing that was remarkable is he said, my strategy for the company and my strategy for our community have been the same, and have been consistent across the two forever. And that has been, I'd rather be better than bigger, because if you're better, you can get bigger. But if you're bigger, it doesn't mean that you're going to get better. And so we've heard a lot of times, you know, when you kind of reflect on that, we've heard about the, you know, we've all got our example. Hey, try to get a little bit better every day. It's not rocket science. But when you put it into practice and you can role model it, it puts things back in your control. And it asks great questions. What are you trying to really be better at? How does the clarity of what you're trying to be better fit to your strategy and the choices that you're making, both as a leader, as a company, as a business, as a brand? And how do you define what being better is? There's business aspects to it, and there's, in this case, community aspects. What does being better mean for the community in the city that we were living in? And in this case, this gentleman, you know, he decided to take a risk decades ago in a city that was not doing well, and he committed to actually rebuilding a part of the city downtown, putting in new buildings, refurbishing. He didn't have to do it. There wasn't a financial return, but he knew the city could be better if they invested into the economic turnaround of the city. And I can tell you that, you know, 40 years later, it is thriving because he took a heroic step to make the city better by investing into its economic and building infrastructure. So he applied the business philosophy to the community philosophy. And I think great leaders realize that they can have a very multi-tiered impact, but you have to be consistent and committed.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that term, being better versus bigger. Like it a lot.
I mean, think about it. A lot of people define success as bigger. You know, they want to see numbers. They want KPIs that go up. They want higher returns. I think you get there, but you can't sustain it if you're not better. It's actually quite simple and quite profound when you play it out and you know, tease it out. How can I be better, not bigger?
Really interesting point, Chris. We are just about to broaden a project with a client of ours. And the CEO running the business looks at numbers first and foremost. When he describes his own leadership style, he says, I'm very goal-oriented. Mm. And he is successful in it. He also expects and promotes a couple of leadership principles that both you and I believe in, as, for example, accountability, right? Both you and I have been in competitive sports teams. Both you and I have been in highly successful teams and companies. And one of the core elements is accountability. I think also one of the common elements is to have a common picture of success. And often this is quantified. Just 3 days ago, I talked with the owner of a business, and quadruple did four-digit number of people, a global business. Pick every five-year period in the last 35 years, and they doubled sales and the number of employees. They have been successful, and always having a number in mind has been part of their success. So on this point of better versus bigger, would you give up numbers as targets altogether? Or how do you help teams and individuals focus on getting better without losing sight of the numbers?
Provocatively, you know, you, me, we phrase this debate like it's there is a trade-off. There's an either or, let's do this or that. And you and I both know, and those listening, that the more complex the business, the more complex the challenge, you have to navigate the and. And it's you know, the end is you wake up, you know, when you start being a manager and become a leader and go through this transition and transformation of yourself and your business. It's never that simple. It's never either or. The magic is you've got to find the and, because you're yeah. trying to sustain being better or success over time. You don't want to do it on a year. You'd want to do it consistently over time. And we both have mentors and leaders we can think of that have done brilliant jobs at that. But I would be so confident that they wouldn't take the easy way out and say there's an either or. I think you have to find a way to do both, and both at the same time. And there's trade-offs, and you've got to be clear. You know, you've got a recent story of an example where somebody said, you know, I can't give you certainty, but I can give you clarity. Yes. And I think if you can get clear on what success is and have the audacity to have both numeric and cultural measures and maybe even crazy enough, have community measures or planet measures or people measures, you know, there's a definition of success in capitalism, which is just numbers. There's a success of triple bottom line, which is people, planet, profit. And it's in that order: people, planet, profit. Because if you take care of your people, you take care of the planet, you're going to be better. You're going to get more earnings. People will reward you with more brand loyalty and purchase. You then therefore get the profit. So I feel pretty passionate that the more complex the leadership challenge gets over time, as we all move through the organization and careers, you have to navigate the and. It's the power of the and. It's not either or.
Yeah. So it's not bigger or better. It's first better, and then maybe one day be bigger as well.
Yeah. It's you know, try to be better, because if you're better, it doesn't mean you're going to be bigger. But if you're bigger, it doesn't mean that you're better.
Yeah.
I mean, think of so many different companies that got bigger, but I mean, we all have so many examples that just couldn't sustain themselves. You know, there's so many stories, whether it's BlackBerry or, you know, it's Kodak. I mean, there's so many stories out there.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yes. You've got your own examples with Apple that I'm sure, you know, if you went through that story and talked about better or bigger, I mean, oh my gosh, Steve Jobs was relentless on finding better, more intuitive solutions. And you could really apply that mindset to the way that he approached it. And you lived that live personally.
That's true. Yeah. That 1 year working with Steve Jobs on and off, and then one day also live having him in Berlin, in fact, substantially informed what I think about strategy, teams, and leadership, and is very related to focusing on better every single day. You bet. There was no doubt about this, right? And
yeah,
better,
I mean,
wasn't just
a
guarantee
to plan
for good enough.
Huh? Yeah, I've been listening to podcasts recently on Kobe Bryant, the basketball player.
Yeah.
And his Mamba mentality, you know, it's hard work. You know, in the equation of hard work or talent, which is more important? You know, the hard work and then the obsessive nature with raising better, in this case, across the fundamentals, every aspect of the game, whether it's Kobe Bryant, Steve Jobs, or others, they never talked about being bigger. I mean, Kobe wanted to be the world's best basketball player, win a lot of championships. And then he very openly says that my definition of success changed towards the end of my career. Now it was inspiring the next generation to be the best that they could be. So his definition shifted. And I think that's true, whether it's, you know, any major mentor or leader that we think of. But I bet you'll find that being better is more sustainable in different aspects of their transformation of growth over time than it is being bigger, because the numerics just fall away at some point.
Yeah. Let me ask a question that's somewhat related to this. So changing definitions of success.
Yeah.
And related to the current period we are living in. I think the time that the term VUCA has been used in, and I think it was coined in the US military, if I'm not mistaken. So this volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world that has informed business and leadership conversations from the end of the 90s to, say, 2015 roundabout. I think that same time has also been influenced by social media and lots of information being available all of a sudden by the digitalization that makes almost every information available at our fingertips if we want to. I still believe that this only led some people to be distracted at times, not only teenagers growing up, but also business people like you and me and like our clients. They increasingly complained over the last 5, 6, 7 years about overload, about being distracted. But they still knew the position where they were, and they still had clarity on the objective or the direction where they were heading. They were just distracted. In those last 12, 18 months, my feeling is that quite a number of people are not only distracted, but they are more disoriented, right? On top of all the changes from digitalization and social media, there are changes from AI, which just increase the pace. And I myself, as you know, I co-founded an AI business 5 years ago with 6 partners. So I'm sometimes in this and advising clients on AI. I can see how automating and just making data used in a more intelligent manner speeds things up, and sometimes quite drastically by dimensions rather than just incremental percentage points. And tariffs and wars, at least in Europe now, I think all of these things make people feel not only distracted, but increasingly disoriented. They sometimes struggle to figure out where am I and where am I heading, right? They really need to shake themselves and clarify again position and target. First question, does this resonate with you? Do you feel similarly? And if yes, Chris, what do you do to help people who are disoriented to get reoriented?
Yeah, I think if we could solve that one, we would
run a different business.
Yeah, it would be interesting where the headquarters would be, you know.
on the moon.
You know, I VUCA speaks to me because one of the persons I learned that from, Bob Johansson, the Institute for the Future. He was a big champion of, you know, going from volatility to vision, from uncertainty to understanding, from complexity to clarity, and from ambiguity to agile. And I think one of the responses I think are founded in his acronym. You know, understanding is so hard because you get multiple information from all over the place, and who do you trust? Clarity versus complexity. It is clearly getting more complex, and who do you trust to give you clarity that you can cling to? And then the last one on ambiguity to being agile, I think it's so clear. I mean, the adoption of AI, we've all seen the numbers to get to 100 million folks has been done in a week versus, you know, Netflix, pick any adoption, the iPhone, you know, which took years or months or whatever. The speed of adoption is happening so quickly because of technology. I don't know that I have a response that I think is a strong enough answer. I think, you know, I think authenticity and trust are more important than anything in ever before. I mean, you can get information anywhere so quickly, but do you trust it? Then what do you do with it? And how do you answer those questions for yourself? That's a hard one.
Yeah, agree. When you look back at your career, is there any one thing that you would highlight that you would do differently if you ran your career again?
I don't know that I would do anything differently. I think as you lead through organizations and countries and cultures, you become ever more aware that there's really, especially if you're a CEO, you know, I was very lucky to be a CEO, And I had a funny moment around the kitchen table one time where my younger children who were in grade school looked at me and said, "Daddy, you're a CEO. What do you do?" And I laughed and I kind of thought about that. And I said, "Not much."
Not much.
And they said, what do you mean? You're running the company. There's lots of people and all that stuff. And I said, "Well, if I do somebody else's work, they're going to get pissed off and they're going to be upset and then they're not going to be happy." Yeah. So what I learned clearly over time, and I think this applies for leaders and CEOs and aspiring leaders, is that as you go up through the levels of leadership, you ultimately realize that leaders, CEOs, organization leaders do two things ever more increasingly throughout their career, especially as they get to higher levels. One is they set direction.
Yeah.
Their job is to set direction. Their job is to identify priorities and resources and put plans and people in place to get the result.
Yeah.
The second thing they do is they communicate. And the real challenge is, you know, can they envision and inspire and energize and enable? You know, I think at P&G, we always had the three E's of envisioning, energizing, and enabling. But that's it. You know, can you set direction, get the resources in place, communicate a simple, clear vision that excites people and gets them passionate to get around it, and then get all the stuff out of the way to help them get done? So I think the more you realize, to answer your question, what would I do differently or what would I think about differently, is if you accept that that's what leaders ultimately do at bigger companies or organizations, you set direction or help set direction, and then you communicate and clarify, I really think those two things have, way oversimplified. Those are the real things that you've got to build on as a leader as you evolve your career. And I think knowing that in my earlier days, maybe I would have focused on skills and things a little bit differently, or it might have helped me to go more successfully or to direct challenges. You're not paid to have all the answers yourself. You're expected to get better results, but you get that with other people, through other people, yeah. not all yourself. So, you know, my son and daughter were very profound. You know, "Daddy, what do you do?" And so, you know,
CEO, what do you do?
You don't do much yourself anymore over time. You can't. It's impossible.
Yeah, you're right. Awesome. Thank you so much. Chris, like every of those interviews with teammates and with guests alike, we'd like to get towards wrapping up by five rapid fire questions that I ask every single time when I interview great people like yourself. So let's fire away. What's the best advice you've ever received?
Focus on being better, not bigger.
What's the most important trait you look for in leaders?
I think it's a combination of, you know, it's their character, it's their integrity, and if you're really lucky, just an incredible positive mindset and approach.
What's your personal go-to tool when things get stressful?
Creating space. I think when things get very difficult and challenging, a leader's job is to create space at the right moment, in the right time, with the right people to think about something proactively instead of having to react. So if you can create space, it becomes a tool in your toolkit to get after the hard stuff. Because if a leader doesn't create space to talk about the difficult challenges or issues, then you just get stuck in doing all the things that you do day after day. And you lose time and time passes you by and you don't get the results or you don't get the shift. So I think the tool is, as a leader, is knowing when and how to create space with the right people at the right time. And it's a lot simpler than it sounds, or a lot harder than it sounds.
I agree. Which book, podcast, or quote has recently impressed you?
As I said earlier, we were chatting, I've been a big fan in the gym recently, listening to Kobe Bryant's Mamba Mentality. It is absolutely amazing when you listen to his mindset and approach and how he applied that from his high school days and then how he lived it and did it. And then you listen to all his competitors who give their stories about him. He was at a totally different level. So Kobe Bryant Mamba mentality, can't, super impressed.
Mamba mentality. I'm going to look that up. And if you could change one thing about the world of work today, what would it be?
I think the magic place is trust. You know, if we were, it's so hard to say. And I think about with you know, our team and the work that we do, it's all about, a well-led world. And I think a well-led world thrives on trust, and organizations that sustain a better culture, better performance, better impact on their business, their customers, consumers, the world. Trust is so hard for all the complex reasons that you talked about earlier about in the, you know, this challenging place. And I'm really inspired, you know, I'm dating myself, and maybe some of the listeners have or haven't heard it, but Stephen Covey wrote, you know, The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. And in there he references something that he called the speed of trust. And I've always loved that quote. You know, we've all worked on teams, played on teams, whether it's an orchestra, a football, soccer team, a business team. But man, you can tell when you trust all your teammates and you know exactly what they're going to do and how they're going to do it and they're going to get the result, the speed of getting things done in a better, faster, higher results-oriented way is magic. So, I mean, if we had a speed of trust across more family members, more business associates, it would make such a magical difference, because that's where we all want to be. We want to be in a place, a team, a family, friends, where the speed of trust, and I think that would change the world.
Awesome. I couldn't agree more, Chris. Thank you so much for this interview. It's been magic, filled with great diamonds, pieces of gold, nuggets about how to lead yourself and others to more success. And you covered how to operationalize purpose, how you've done it in your company at the time, how a family from India was brought across for their part of making that purpose come to life. You touched the key drivers of engagement, making people feel valued, included, and empowered. And you elaborated very passionately and convincingly about the red thread that goes through leadership, that goes through our team and our friendship, Chris, and our collaboration as well, which is the word trust, the speed of trust. It's been magic. It's been a great pleasure to have this conversation with you and to have you as a guest here on the podcast show Enlightwolf. I would like to invite you to close the call with either a question or a suggestion, a thought that you'd like to leave our audience with.
You know, I'll just say different words with what I talked about earlier. There's magic in compound interest. And, you know, we all know the concept of compound interest. If you leave your money in the bank and it grows, it grows, it grows. Well, go back to the comment I made earlier. How do you constantly be better every day? So the challenge is, what does it mean for us, each of us? It's so hard to do. But if we can consistently be better a little bit over time and are committed to it, like Kobe Bryant and so many others, amazing individuals, the difference is a month from now or 2 months from now or a year from now, we all know are significant. So how do we figure out what it means for us each individually, and how do we consistently be a little bit better all the time?
Awesome. I love it. I will make this my own mantra and start working on it tomorrow, Chris. It's my pleasure to have you as a friend, to have you on the team, and to have you here as a guest in the Lightwolf podcast. Thank you very much, dear Chris Sergio.
Thank you, Stefan.